Gough. Thanks very much for attending. We've got a lot of content, so we won't dawdle. My name's Paul Conroy, but I'm not going to be speaking for that long. Just do a quick introduction before I hand over to Phil Whipps from CGI, one of Microsoft's system integrator partners in the identity management space. Thanks very much for coming. I assume you're all the true believers of FIM. Is that an unrealistic expectation? This session's for hardcore FIM people. It's not an introduction session. This is for going to the extensibility points beyond your average deployment of Forefront Identity Manager. If you're not a hardcore FIM person, I just want to be really clear that FIM does a lot of stuff in out-of-the-box scenarios. So the core bread and butter things of FIM is doing user self-service password resets, so credential management, also provisioning users to Active Directory, and group and distribution list management. So to do that kind of stuff, it's a relatively small deployment scenario. Still uses an experienced partner to do it, but it's something which is very achievable in a moderate size enterprise, not for the small ones. What we're going to talk to you about today is something beyond that. So it's going to be far more intricate, it's far more detailed, and for a tech ed session, far more fun. That's why we chose this one. So Phil and CGI have done some really good work with one particular customer, which is a case study in this discussion. It's in the healthcare vertical. So I suspect a few of you might be in the healthcare space, which is really good because it's got a lot of privacy and security considerations which are relevant to other enterprises. So national privacy policy, medical records, that kind of practitioner or clinician information is really important. Also, the healthcare vertical has a lot of boutique applications, stuff you don't see in the regular enterprise, and you might not be in the healthcare vertical, but you've probably got your own boutique systems you want to connect to a bespoke HR or accounting package. So that kind of experience that Microsoft and CGI got out of this particular healthcare deployment is also relevant to other verticals. So welcome to the healthcare people as well. But I suspect most of you are here for the extensibility point. Actually creating your own management agent to connect to both your on-premise and off-premise assets. And that's what we're going to spend most of our time talking about. Essentially, FIM and also the predecessors to FIM, you could create a management agent and connect to your bespoke solutions. However, with FIM R2 coming out, there's a new framework. So it's the ECMA, so the Extensible Management Agent Platform, or ECMA2. Is how we've described it, and a lot of the documentation describes it, is a new, easier platform to build management agents. And Phil has done a great piece of extensibility, both for the HealthSmart customer, but also a really interesting use of it, which I find personally interesting, is creating a management agent against the Twitter API. So actually an off-premise, a cloud-based asset, actually pulling in data, pulling it into FIM, and then you can play around and synchronize that data how you want. So I'll finish with my section and hand over to Phil as we talk about those scenarios. I'll stick around, so if there are any questions about FIM, FIM R2, I'll be around and answer those questions at the end. So with that, take it away, Phil.
Thanks, Paul. As Paul said, my name's Phil Whipps. I'm a principal consultant for CGI in Australia. CGI is probably one of the biggest companies you've never heard of. It's a Canadian-based company. Founded just a year after Microsoft in 1976. There's about 31,000 employees worldwide. Personally, I've been working in identity management for about 8 years now, starting out in Novell's Identity Manager product and playing with that since DirectXML days. Then I've done a fair few implementations of IBM's Tivoli Identity Manager and Access Manager products, and obviously Forefront Identity Manager as well since it came out with beta. One of the issues I've seen with all the identity management implementations I've done is the products are limited to what they supply out of the box. So in this session today, I'm hopefully going to show you how easy it is to develop on top of those out-of-the-box MAs, create your own management agents and extensibility, and connect to those applications. So in that, this is the agenda for the session. So I'll go over a quick overview of FIM 2010. As Paul said, this is going to be a technical session, so I will go over that fairly quickly. I'll go into some of the customizations with the portal, also the customization with the web services, so building your own custom applications, and in the actual demo, I've built a Silverlight application to create contractors within the FIM portal, so we'll go into the details of that. A few other extensibility points like PowerShell, workflow activities, and as Paul mentioned, we'll go into the details of creating a management agent that connects to the Twitter API. So if people in the audience wanted to start following, I will actually bring in followers of FIM Tips. So if you want to see your name up in lights, start following that. And then at the end, I'll finish off with a case study of an implementation of FIM we did for HealthSmart, a Victorian health government initiative. Okay, so the Forefront Identity Manager, it's been around for a little while now, and Paul went through a lot of these components in his presentation as well. It came from MIIS, moved into the ILM 2007. The main components within those solutions was the synchronisation service, and then came along Forefront Identity Manager 2010, and that introduced a lot of other services to the identity management platform. Things like the portal and the FIM service in the back end of that portal, other declarative provisioning or codeless provisioning, as they call it, group management, and a few other password portals and things like that. And then recently, it's actually still in beta, they've released R2 into beta, and that brings a few other enhanced features like your web-based password reset. Instead of having to use an ActiveX control, you're able to now implement that in an extranet scenario. And also, more important for this demonstration, the enhanced management agent framework, so the ECMA2 framework. So you may or may not have seen this picture before. This is the extensibility points that FIM currently have. So within this presentation, we'll be going through your PowerShell, and as I mentioned in the agenda, portal, custom applications, your custom workflow activities, and your actual adapters, so your Twitter API in this instance. Okay, we'll start with a portal customization. Before I go on, I will actually be stopping in between each section, and if there is any questions, I'm more than happy to take them. I might try and limit them to about 3 or 4 questions, and then we can answer more at the end if we have time. So the FIM portal is a Windows SharePoint Services implementation. So one of the benefits of that is you can use your current themes that you have, Windows SharePoint Services, and implement that within the FIM portal. So the next slide, I'll give you an example of how that's actually done. Other configuration components you have are your portal configuration, so your navigation bar, and your main central components. Again, I'll point them out in the next slide, probably easier to show you rather than talk about it. And resource control display configuration. So this is the component used by FIM to display your creation, editing and viewing of all objects within the portal. So if you create your own object or just use your standard person object, this is how you create, edit and view them. It's actually a XML configuration that's saved into the portal and then displayed. There are a few limitations as to what you can do with that, and one of the options you've got is to, as we'll show a little bit later, is to develop your own interface. Another extensibility point would be the schema. So the schema within the portal, a lot of people, once you mention extending schemas, get a little bit scared. Probably coming from an AD background and not wanting to worry about replication and things like that. The schema within the portal is not linked directly to Active Directory. It's a part of the FIM service database, so it's all database transactions in the back end. So you're able to create your custom objects and also extend your attributes. Okay, as I was mentioning before, you've got your navigation bar configuration, all those items down the left and within the middle are customizable. You can choose what is displayed there. And also stored against each of those items is what's called a usage keyword. I'm trying to think of the word. A usage keyword is associated to each of those objects. And then based on an MPR, that usage keyword will then be linked to display to only certain people. For example, if you wanted to create a contractor's usage keyword, You can then associate that to an MPR and then in turn a set full of contractors. So only contractors will see those things. So as a bit of an example, these components can be changed using SharePoint themes and also modifying the images within the portal itself. So that's the first part done. Is there any questions on portal customizations? Oh.
Question for you guys. Who here has customized the portal in FIM? I know some organizations up the back.
Sweet.
So it's probably not the easiest task to do. Like Phil's able to do it really quickly, as you can see with the tech and stuff. So modifying the RCDC, it requires XML. It's not SharePoint web parts. It's not drag and drop and all that wonderful thing. So it does take a bit of work, but there's a few people in the audience. Dave, you should have your hands up. You've modified it yourself too.
I've probably done it better than me. It's not the sexiest implementation there, but just a good example of what can be done. Okay, we'll move on to the web service. So within FIM, personally, I think the main advantage that was implemented with FIM 2010 is not the portal itself. It's actually the FIM service that's behind that portal. It gives you the functionality to hook into that web service API, create your own applications or create your own either client-based applications or web-based applications, and basically extend it to the way that you'd like it. So not getting into too much detail with the web service endpoints, but there are three or four that you should be aware of. There's the resource factory endpoint, which is used to create objects within the portal, and there's also the resource endpoint, and that's for your editing and deleting of objects. The other more interesting endpoint is the alternate endpoint, which is pretty much a mirror of the resource endpoint. What that does is it allows you to do the same things, but it does it as an anonymous user. And the main example of where that's used is with your password reset components. When a user tries to authenticate to change their password, they don't actually authenticate because they don't know their username or call. They don't know their password, sorry. So what they have to do is contact the portal to grab their question and answers, and that actually uses the alternate endpoint. And the FIM service will then go away, grab their questions, answers. Once they've successfully answered those questions, it'll talk to the security token service to generate a proper ticket to allow them to authenticate. A good example of that was actually done by a bloke called Jeremy Pallinger. I think he worked at Agile at the time. What he did was wrote an application using the web service and integrated it with Speech Server. So what you're able to do is call up an automated help desk. It would then grab your mobile number or whatever number you were calling from and then go off into the FIM service, look for your question and answers and read them out to the person. And once that person answered them correctly, it would then SMS the password to that user's mobile. So that was a pretty cool implementation of using that alternate endpoint. All of these endpoints you can actually implement using... there's a Microsoft... resource management client on Codeplex, which actually creates a client and makes it a little bit easier for you to integrate with that web service. And all that's open source and available to download. And there's a few good examples in there, including password reset examples. Other additional uses that I've seen is client-based applications, which I'll go into a little bit more detail with the HealthSmart implementation. Password reset, as I mentioned, and also web-based applications. So as I mentioned before, if you don't like the way the portal looks and feels, you can build your own portal. And we'll go into that in a little bit more detail in a second. Another excellent example is ADFS Attribute Store. So there's people out there that are using ADFS and querying to the FIM service to generate claims for all their claims-aware applications. So what we'll do now is I'll go into a bit of a demonstration, hopefully, of Silverlight integration. So what I've got here is just a basic Silverlight application. Fingers crossed everything works. And let's create a demo user. Have a name. Anyone?
Wally Lewis.
Okay. Wally Lewis. That'll do. So the benefit, obviously, to creating your own interface for creating users. You can add your little flyouts to the left there, and validation for each of your objects. There are certain validations within the portal, but obviously it's a little bit sexier with Silverlight. So we'll go into that. Tabs aren't working. Yeah, that'll probably do us. So what we'll do now is it'll go off and hopefully create the object within FIM. I'll go into the details of the code in a second, but what this is doing is it's going off to an intermediary web service, and that web service, all that's doing is creating the object. I'm not sure who in the room here has actually programmed with Silverlight before. Oh, there's a couple half hands sticking up. So as you're aware there, well, for the people that aren't aware, Silverlight's an asynchronous programming interface. I'm not the expert on Silverlight, so that's about all I'm going to say. But basically, we can't implement the current resource management client that's available directly into Silverlight. So what we've done is we've just created an intermediary web service that just creates a contractor in this case. So as you can see there, we've now created the account pending approval. So let's go into the FIM portal. As you can see, the user hasn't been created yet. As the message said, it was pending approval. So we've got a management policy rule here, which is for creation of all contractors. This MPR does two things. It assigns rights to the account that's actually creating the objects. In this case, it's a contractor admin set, which has got one user, which is actually the user running the app pool, IIS app pool for that Silverlight application. And what it also does is it's associated a workflow component that's an approval component, basically saying that all contractors that get created need to be approved by Joe Manager. So we'll just jump into Joe Manager's FIM instance. Go to his request. That'd be right. And it doesn't create it. Okay, I won't delve on that too much. I have seen it before, taking a little while to actually process a request, so I won't try and troubleshoot that. What we can see, though, is that the object was actually created for Wally Lewis, and it's currently set at an authorising status and waiting for the contractor account to be approved by Joe Manager. Give it one more try. Hey, there it is. So I'll go through and approve that request. And then go back into the administrative portal. And we should have a user account for that. Wally Lewis. There we go. So this has got all the details then. So as I was mentioning before about the resource control display configurations, this particular tab here, the TechEd tab, has been created on top of the current RCDC for users. And it's just to bringing together all the components that are relevant to this demonstration. But that's where you'd add all your additional attributes as well if you extend the schema. Okay, I'll quickly just go over the... I won't delve into the code too much. There's probably not going to assist. This code is available if you'd like it after the presentation. Just come up and see us and we can quite easily get that to you. But wait for it to load. The majority of the time spent developing this as well was more doing the GUI stuff, so making it all nice and pretty. The actual code for creating the objects is quite simple. So this is your GUI components. And what happens is you request the account, and what that's doing is that'll then go off and open another window, which is a progress window, and it'll pass the contractor object with all the details from that form to that window, and on load of that window, that's when we actually create the account. So as I was mentioning before, Silverlight being asynchronous, what we've done is we've created a callback for when the account was completed, and the actual creation of the account is down a little bit further. As I said, I'm not the best Silverlight programmer in the world, so there may be a better way of doing that, but this is how this particular implementation works. So this client.create contractor async is then calling this intermediary web service, and this is where the main creation of the object using the resource management client actually happens. So you've got your default client, which is part of the CodePlex resource management client. All you're doing is creating an object, giving it all those attributes, and then creating. So as you say, it's quite simple, that side of things. Okay. I'll go back to the presentation. So is there any questions on web services with Finport? No? Okay. We'll move on. Next component is PowerShell. So with the FIM service, what Microsoft, as well as a couple of other people, have done is they've created snap-ins for PowerShell, which basically interacts the same way as that Silverlight application does, but developed for PowerShell itself. So the main component used out there is the FIM automation snap-in, and the main purpose of that is to migrate your details between your environments, so from your dev to your system tests, your pre-production, etc. And there's four main components. Your export and import, which takes the data out of the FIM service and obviously puts it back in the FIM service. Your convert to and convert from, so that takes it from an XML file or an object and converts that into a FIM service. I'll show you a little bit later in the next slide or so, a bit more details about these. But then you've got your join and compare. So again, I'll explain them a bit more in the next slide. As I said, the main point is migration between environments, but there are other uses as well, like bulk imports. If you've got a heap of groups or users that you want to import into the portal, you can use the automation snap-in to do those things. There's also a great site out there, the FIM script box. I don't know, has anyone in this room heard of the FIM script box before? Yeah, a few. It's very helpful for creating PowerShell scripts. There's a lot of community-contributed examples out there. The other commandlet that they've got is a FIM PowerShell commandlet, which is available on CodePlex. What that gives you the ability to do is create a FIM session and create objects, modify objects, search for objects, and obviously delete objects directly from PowerShell. So it's a little bit different to the FIM automation one and a little bit easier to use. Other integrations with PowerShell would the WMI calls can be done via PowerShell to your actual synchronization service to run all your synchronization jobs or your run profiles and things like that. So this is just a quick example of how you'd use the automation snap-in. So you'd do your export from your development environment, and in a lot of cases you'd export that to an XML file, for example, and then you'd do the same export to production. So this isn't a complete export of all details within the portal. You can actually choose what you want to export. For example, you may want to just export the schema, or you may want to just export policies or your custom objects. Obviously just make sure that you're exporting the same thing in both environments, because when you go to do deltas, if they're not the same, it'll either delete or create additional objects. You then run it through a join, and what that does is it takes the details from both of those exports, and based on join criteria that you supply, and I think by default is display name for most objects, it'll actually match them up. And then you've got the compare, which takes those matched objects and generates deltas for import into your target system. At that point, you'd normally export it out to a file rather than just doing it all within the one PowerShell script. But then you'd take that export and obviously you'd import that into your next environment. The reason you'd normally export it is if you run that separately a bit later, you can also generate the failed changes out to another file and then re-import that and work out what went wrong. Okay, this is just a brief overview of just a quick use of the FIM automation snap-in. Can the people at the back actually see that, or do you want me to zoom in? It's all right? Okay, I'll leave it at that. What this script's actually doing is doing an export from FIM of all request objects. Prior to release 2, all your requests within the portal, actually they still get deleted after 30 days, but after 30 days, by default, those request objects will be deleted. And in a lot of cases, that's what people actually reported on. So I've actually used this before in environments to export those requests, and then that can be manipulated, then put into a database to generate reports on after the fact. With R2 now, it does a similar kind of thing anyway for all the reports. So all that's doing is grabbing those requests and then exporting them out to an XML file. And there is actually one technically wrong thing with this script, and I have a little USB stick. If anyone that can find what the issue is. Hey. A spelling mistake. Where's the spelling mistake? Fail. No, that's not it. I'll give you one anyway. Anyone else? Come on. Bring out your inner geek. Nope. Okay, we'll move on then. Oh, better tell you. Okay, as you can see here, what we're doing is we're exporting to, for starters, it's a crappy named variable because we're exporting requests into schema. That's not the point. What we're doing is we're exporting into a variable there and then piping a different variable out to the file. But I'll still give you one for the spelling mistake. Okay, is there any questions on the PowerShell integration? Nope.
A question, who's used PowerShell? Who's used PowerShell, called it? Not just generically, but used it from FIM, yeah. Call it. Okay, a bunch of people. Provisioning link mailboxes is one common use of that. The PowerShell commands to provision a mailbox is something that the link guys at Microsoft quite often ask the identity people on good ways to automate that process. So a bunch of people with PowerShell.
Cool. Okay, another extensibility point within FIM is your workflow components. So what a lot of people implement custom workflows to do is to implement business logic that's not available out of the box. Things like, I'll show you in the next couple of slides, but there's an example at HealthSmart where a user could actually work in two different agencies. So they could work in Peninsula as a doctor and then Austin, for example, as a visiting medical officer. And what we did was generated a custom workflow component that would actually merge those two accounts if there was a second create initiated for that second agency. So as I said, we'll go into that in the next slide because I've actually got an example of that particular workflow. It's built on top of Windows Workflow Foundation. So if any of you have had experience with Windows Workflow Foundation, and just out of interest, who has? Okay. Cool. So you're able to then use the same thing within the FIM portal. And also once you start developing within the FIM portal on Windows Workflow Foundation, you can then take that to all your other applications that implement Windows Workflow Foundation. Within FIM, there's two main components. Your activity, which is the core workflow component, that's the actual code behind it. And then you've got your activity setting part, which is the GUI component that's displayed within the portal. So a good example of that would be your Q&A gate, so where you're actually entering all your questions you'd like to prompt the user for. That particular screen is a activity part. So you can customise that to include extra input that you need within your workflow. Another example would be to pass workflow parameters through to things like your outbound synchronisation rules. And a good example of that would be creating a custom activity to automatically generate a random password. I think this was raised in Paul's presentation on Wednesday. But then what you could do is split that automatically generated password in half, email half off to your manager, and then email the other half to you or some other person. And then you're able to grab that password and pass it through to the outbound synchronization rule via workflow parameters. So there's three main types of workflow activities. There's the authentication, authorization, and action. So authentication is not used very much, mainly just used for the password reset components. So you can use the Q&A gate, or people have developed their own smart card component for that as well. And authorization, that's obviously your approval stage. So another good thing to note is that with your authorization and authentication workflow activities, they are actually done before the object is committed to the database, or in our case, created in the portal. And then after that fact, it actually runs the action workflow. So you wouldn't obviously create an authorization for creating accounts as an action workflow activity, because at that point it's already been created, so you can't really stop it from being created. So you've got your rights-based MPR at the start of that workflow as well. Another interesting point to note is that when you're running requests through the FIM synchronization service, the FIM synchronization service user actually bypasses your authentication and authorization workflows. So you can't approve modifications of things like your email address or things like that coming through the synchronization service. Okay, this is just a few of the out-of-the-box activities, more of a reference slide than anything else. I won't really delve too deep into them. The main ones used are things like your functional evaluator, where you can concatenate strings and generate substrings of certain things and pass them off to another attribute, and also your approval and notification workflows, which are pretty self-explanatory. Okay, so don't strain your eyes to see this, because I will actually blow it up in a second, but this is the workflow I was talking about before. So what this did was, on creation of that second user within another agency, it would query the FIM service to find out if a user with similar details defined by those joint criteria defined by HealthSmart, determine if they already exist within the portal, and if they do, it would send an approval request to actually join those users, and on an approved request, it would join them up to both agencies, and on a denied request, it would actually create a new account or go through to the next workflow component, which was to generate an account name. Okay, so as I said, as we move through here, we've got the match on multiple users. We check to see if they're from a different agency. If they are from a different agency, we'll go through and set an approval workflow. And on approval, we'll add the user to that additional agency. And then what we actually do is terminate that workflow activity, because we don't want to continue on, because that initial workflow was a creation request. So we obviously don't want to create that user. And then on the denied activity, we will actually pass them all the way through, and we'll create that new user with a new account name. Okay, any questions on workflow activities? No? Cool. Okay, we'll move on to the extensibility management agents. So these management agents are pretty much a cookie cutter for integrating with your non-out-of-the-box applications. So what you're able to do from the synchronization service, under the action menu, you can actually generate code, which is the core code for creating that management agent. So I'll show you that in the demonstration in a second, but it is quite simple to create the base code for a management agent. And these management agents are used for things like your exports, imports, as well as password synchronization, if you want to synchronize passwords to your target systems. They can be packaged and deployed, or if you want to commercialize your management agent, what that allows it to do is, from the synchronization service, instead of selecting extensible management agent 2, you can actually have your own management agent displayed in that drop-down list. And again, I'll show you that in the demonstration in a second. So obviously that gives you the ability to connect to your enterprise applications as well as your cloud-based applications. Personally, I believe the only real difference between these two is the API you use. I'm sure people may disagree, but as far as a management agent is concerned, and as I'll show you in a second with the Twitter API, which is a cloud-based application, it's just a different API to what you'd use locally. Okay, again, another reference slide that you can have a look at later, but these are your default out-of-the-box management agents. There's a few updates to these that Paul went through in his presentation on Wednesday, a few version changes and a couple of additions. So I'll just leave that there for a sec to have a look at. All this information as well is available on the Microsoft website. Okay, so the new ECMA 2 framework, some of the main features. The best one for me is the core-based import. Has anyone in the room actually created a management agent before? Yep, just you. Okay, beforehand with the older version, what you actually had to do is, for example, for imports, you'd query your target system, whether it be LDAP or whatever you want, grab all the information, and then you'd write that out to a certain file, so an XML file or CSV file, with all the details that the FIM synchronization service will then grab and bring into its synchronization components. What you're able to do now is read all those information directly into a C# object and just pass that object directly to the synchronization service. So it cuts out that writing that file to the file system. So that's a bit of an advantage. Another great advantage is your batch-based imports. Beforehand, you just create that one file and then write it to file to import. You couldn't actually batch any processes. So now what you're able to do is actually say, I want to query 500 users from LDAP. And then after that's finished, I'll query another 500. So if you've got limitations with your target system, you're actually able to now batch up your imports and exports. Another feature that's with the new management agents is full exports, which weren't available before. So full imports were, obviously, you just grab everything from your source system and bring it into the connector space. And now what a full export will do is it'll take everything within there and then throw that to your connector space. So that was something that was requested by a few people. It gives you the ability as well to create schema and partition discovery. Again, that wasn't available in the previous versions. So what you'd have to do if you wanted to modify the schema within the management agent is pretty much recreate that management agent. Now what you're able to do is query off to your target system and say, OK, I need an update of the schema, and then you can present that within the management agent as well. And customised parameters and interfaces, I'll go over that in a bit more detail on the next slide. And the final thing is capabilities. Some of these capabilities were actually around with the old version, but undocumented. So now they've supported them and documented them. So what you're able to do is say, for this management agent, I don't want deltas. Or for this management agent, I don't need confirming imports. Those kind of things can now be done from within the code. So this is your old management agent configuration. All you really had was your attributes, which were string-based attributes, and the only real option you got was to encrypt those values. And now with the new one, you've got string-based parameters, same as before, but you're also able to hook that back to a regular expression. So, for example, if you wanted to specify an email address in that field, you're able to create a regular expression for an email address, and it'll only allow that input. You've also got your labels and encryption parameters, same as you did before. Also, multi-line text-based parameters, so if you want to do an email template or something that actually needed a bit of structure, you can do that within there as well. Check parameters, dividers, drop-downs, and you've also got the ability now to upload binary objects within these parameters. So, for example, if you wanted to export a picture in your target system, you're able to then import or browse for a certain picture and bring that into your configuration component. Okay. I'll just go into now a quick demo of the Twitter API. Okay. So as I mentioned, within the actions options, you've got create extension projects. You've now got this extensible connectivity to an extensible, well, the old version. For within there, you can select what your favourite programming language is out of Visual Basic and C#. And also select your Visual Studio version 2008 or 2010. And that'll then go off and create the stub for your management agent. So that what was done for this particular management agent. One of the other things it does, so it'll add all your references to the relevant synchronization service components, as well as create a output parameter that actually imports the or exports the compiled DLL directly to your extensions directory. Okay, so I'll just quickly go through this code. So with the previous version, all you really had was file-based imports. And I can bring that there. So you've got your call export, file export. So all this is backwards compatible with the previous version. So you can still create the management agents the same way as you did before, but now you're able to obviously create these based on the new framework. So this particular management agent, all it's really implementing is the import, as well as the schema and a few capabilities and the parameters. So we'll go over. You can continue to add, so obviously if you wanted to add exports to this particular management agent, you can just add that and then the relevant methods that go with it. So we'll leave that for now. So these are your default page size and maximum page size for your batching that I was speaking about earlier. I'm not using that within this example, but if you wanted to set them, you can. So you've got your open connection, similar with the previous one. In this case, what this is doing is it'll contact the Twitter service to a Twitter application that I've created, and then it will use OAuth to actually authenticate. All that's handled by the API, though. All I need is my consumer key and consumer secrets, which are actually going to be passed through to the management agent via the configuration parameters that I showed you before. And then you've got the main component there, which is get imports. So all this is doing is just going to grab a list of followers, iterate through all those followers, and add them as CS entries, as I mentioned, and pass that back to the synchronization service. So what we've also got here is more to import. If we keep that as true, that's how we implement batching and things like that, it'll then go off and then do another iteration of this particular method. Then you've got your close import, your maximum page size. This is the schema components I was speaking about before. In this particular example, I've just hard-coded the schema components that I want, so the object's a Twitter account, and it's got a few attributes. And the capabilities, so we don't want Delta imports, so we don't really support them with this API. And the last bit is your configuration components. So this is your GUI components that we saw before. So what you can see within here is we've just created a label, Twitter API, and we've got a consumer key and a consumer secret, and I've just defaulted them to the values that they're meant to be. So what I'll do as well, just to prove this isn't all smoke and mirrors, I'll just add another label to the bottom. Programmatized isn't a word now. It's been used in two sessions, so it's now officially a word.
Funny. It's an in-joke for those of you who didn't see it. I did a session on Wednesday, and I invented a word in the English language. I should have used the word automate, and I was calling it programmatize. And some of the folks on Twitter sort of had a running joke on that as it was making fun of me. So thanks for mentioning it.
No worries. Awesome. Here to help.
Awesome.
Okay, so that's now compiled. So what we can do is go to the synchronization service and go create, and then we can choose the new extensible connectivity 2.0, give it a name, and this is a new feature here. So what we do now is we select the MA, refresh the interface, and that'll then show us all the things that this particular management agent is implementing. So as you can see, we're implementing schema, configuration parameters. It's an import, there's no Delta imports, there's no exports. As you can see, it's a core-based management agent. So that's just a bit of a overview of what this can do. All that is actually skipped when you package it up. I'll show you a packaged MA in a second, but so as you can see, it's we have our little label there. And we'll go through the separate components. So these are similar to the previous ones, so we don't have any hierarchy within this particular management agent. We'll select Twitter account. We'll select all those attributes. Another good benefit with the new ECMA is you can actually specify different anchor attributes per object. That wasn't available in the previous version. So if you had two different objects, this one doesn't, but if you did, you can select different anchor attributes. We won't specify any filters or joins. We'll actually do that within the portal itself. And same with the attribute flow. And finish that off. So I'll just quickly create two run profiles, one for a full import and a full synchronization. And now we should be able to see if anyone actually started following. So I'll kick that off to import all the followers of that FIMTIPS management agent into the connector space. And while I do that, I'll go to the synchronization rules right in front of me, and I'll create a synchronization rules for the importing of those Twitter accounts. Okay, inbound. Join them on account name and username, and we'll create the resource in FIM. Create a few attribute flows. So your display name.
Are these flows extensible beyond the GUI?
Sorry, what was your question? Are the flows
extensible beyond that GUI?
Yes, you can still use the previous flow, so your rules extension based flows, you can still use that, and they actually have priority over the declarative provisioning.
I thought best practices would indicate moving them into the workflow.
Moving them into here?
Yeah.
That may be best practice, but in a lot of cases that's not how it works. There are certain things you physically can't do within here. So there's a lot of functions, and currently, it doesn't allow you to extend the functions that are available. So I'll just enter that one and show you on the next slide. What you can do is you've got your functions within here, and that lists all the different functions you can do. I have actually re-raised the request in the current release to implement further functions, but at this stage, it's still earmarked for another version. So I'll just go back through. Yeah, we'll need the image. Put that to photo. As I was mentioning before, there are scriptbox PowerShell commands that you can actually use to import all these. So if you have a heap of attributes that you want to import into the portal, you can use PowerShell to do it. Just give it a domain and an employee type, and then we should be done. Okay. So what we'll do now is we'll bring that synchronization rule into the actual management agent. So we'll just run a Delta import and full sync on the FIM synchronization service. And we'll go back to the Twitter MA, and you can see there, these are all the current followers within Twitter. So, David Minnelli. Okay. So now that synchronization rule will be in the metaverse, so we'll run a full synchronization on this Twitter MA.
USB.
And as you can see, it's staged some exports out to the portal. So we'll go ahead and export them. Once that's done, that's pretty much the end of this demonstration. So while we're waiting, is there any questions on extensible management agents?
Questions when a USB key. You want to throw the USB key?
yep, definitely.
I'm
USB key.
With the batch import and export, but there can be a configurable parameter that the user can update.
Yes, definitely. Yep. I'll actually show you it. You can. On your actual run profile configuration, you do actually specify, I think you could see it there as well. So you've got your page size components within there as well. There's a USB key for you. Okay, so that's exported into the portal. So if we go to the list of users.
Phil, I think we had.
There's another question? No, that's fine.
Again, on the portal side.
Yep. Yeah, they're compiled in C# code into a DLL, so...
No, but within the workload, they're not compiled.
Yes, they are. Yes, so there's two components, as I mentioned before, the activity and the actual activity settings part. Both of those are actual DLLs. Those DLLs are defined within the portal itself. So if you go to your all resources... activity information configuration. So they're all the activities you currently have within the portal. For example, notification. And each of them is a DLL. And in this case, what they've done is they import that into the global assembly cache. So that's the details for that particular DLL within there. Does that answer your question? Sort of. No, they should remain. So there's been no hot fixes or anything provided so far that would actually change those components, yeah. So in a lot of cases, they're configuration to the SharePoint services side of things. These components up the top here, they're actual configuration changes within the portal, so they shouldn't be changed within updates. Okay, so what we can do is we'll go to David. Now we can see, oh, you're boring. You don't have a photo for your Twitter. Jeez, come on. We'll go to Paul Conroy. Yeah. No, he does.
What is my photo?
Nice, that's sexy cheesy photo. Yeah. Okay, so as you can see there, what we've done is we've brought in the photo for Paul and also your display name, account name, and the other details that we brought into the portal. Okay. So... that's it. So no other questions on extensible management agents? What time have we got there? Okay. So I'll go into now the details of the HealthSmart case study. So as I said before, we implemented Forefront Identity Manager for this Victorian government organisation. What they needed was to centralise all their clinical applications and also everything associated to those clinical applications. So in this case, they also needed a centralised Active Directory. So they've implemented Forefront Identity Manager to take all those users from all those different agencies and bring them into the one environment with one physical user ID, no matter how many agencies they belong to. So if we start from the left, what we actually developed was an agency feed application. This was a web services application which imported the users directly into the portal. The reason for doing it there rather than through the synchronisation service was due to the fact that when you run, as I mentioned previously, run imports from the synchronization service. It bypasses your authorization and authentication workflows. And part of that process, we needed to join those users. So we needed the authorization workflow to not create the account if they didn't join up to another user. So that's the reason we actually went with that approach. So they've still got the option as well to enter the details into the portal. We created those additional workflows within the portal, as well as a few others. We customized their portal, similar to what you saw before. So most of the configuration items you've seen in this presentation, we actually implemented for HealthSmart. The other component that we created was single sign-on credentials. We created a management agent for Citrix Password Manager. And what that did was, on creation of accounts in other applications, for example, Cerner, it would then go out and create a credential for that particular account. So what that means is when they logged into Cerner for the first time or logged into the Citrix portal for the first time, they didn't actually need to enter in their username and password for Cerner. It automatically entered it for them. So I don't know how many people in the audience are aware of enterprise single sign-on applications, which is what Citrix Password Manager is. But when you go into them first time, it actually prompts you for your username and password, then stores it away so it can automatically log you in next time. So what we were doing here is automatically doing that for them. And then we also implemented management agents for other clinical and enterprise applications like Clarity. And the CGI reporting management agent you see down the bottom there is just another little management agent we created, which allowed them at the time to generate their own reports. So they'd request things through the portal, and then they'd run this reporting management agent. It will go off and generate the reports and email the reports to certain people. And that's pretty much the implementation we had at HealthSmart. Is there any questions on that? Yes?
Specific question on this scenario. Mm-hmm. Password synchronization implemented for all those systems?
It was. We were synchronizing passwords for majority. Some of them it wasn't. Just trying to remember which ones they were. We did have issues synchronising passwords. I believe it was for Infra. I don't think we synchronised passwords for them, but pretty much the rest of them, obviously not the reporting one, we implemented a password DLL for those to synchronise passwords, because they also implemented password change notification service, so the actual password synchronisation. So when they change it on their Active Directory domain, it would flow out to all these different applications.
Could you share the challenge that caused the fact that you couldn't desynchronise that system?
Do you want to repeat the question?
Basically, the challenge we had with implementing the password for Infra is basically the API didn't support it. So there was no way to actually set a password for another user via the API. So, and that was some of the main issues we had with our implementations of most of those management agents is the actual APIs. For example, ISOF didn't have one, so they kind of were creating their own API to do all those things at the same time as we were supposed to be implementing it. So, and also Cerner, we had a lot of issues with their API and undocumented features and things like that. So, cool. Yes? So the question is, okay, so the question is, can you implement pie charts or other customizations to the default FIM portal? Is it in the default FIM portal? No, it's not. No, so you'd have to generate your own application to do those kind of things. The only thing you can do is on these navigation bar objects, for example, your approved requests, you can actually have a brackets after it to say how many requests you've got pending and things like that. Any other questions?
So for this system, all the systems on the left, did they have their own Active Directory and Citrix, etc., or this was all shared infrastructure? The infrastructure on the right was shared across all these?
Was the infrastructure on the right shared? Yeah. No, they were all their own separate systems in their own separate environments.
Okay.
If that answers your question. So obviously Active Directory, they had one massive Active Directory for all users, and then the people that actually maintained all these different applications were completely different groups as well, which is always fun.
Okay. So I want to know, when you started doing this project, how did you go about the first batch of users or
Okay, Yep, okay. So the question was, how did we import the first round of users and migrate into production? So basically what we did was we took it agency by agency, and when we brought them on, we actually imported them manually using web services and PowerShell to import them into the portal ourselves. So we got a list of users from the different agencies, so a spreadsheet from all the agencies with all the details we need. We then manipulated that and imported it manually into the portal. For the initial load, yes, just so we could data cleanse it a bit. I mean, that was also parallel to the process of creating this onboarding web service application. So that wasn't ready at the time that they wanted users into the FIM portal. So kind of went around it that way.
So there's no other IDs involved. You said they exported into a spreadsheet. So
Yes.
Each of those didn't have their own little...
No, most those applications have their own password stores, so they all were stored internally. Initially, Cerner can be actually configured to authenticate via password authentication to an Active Directory, but for their release of Cerner, they didn't do that. They kept their usernames and passwords in their own central store.
What did you do to confirm that two identities were the same? What sort of attribute criteria were you using?
If I can remember correctly, date of birth was one of them, as well as, your first name, last name. So there were a few issues with date of birth as well. I'm sure most people are aware. A lot of people aren't willing to give them away, but, yeah, that was mandated that they did provide that, so which made it a little bit easier for us. But that can be a challenge, yes, working out which attributes you use to join.
And did you have any ideas of...
Okay, so the question is which agency is authoritative? There is a primary agency set for those users, so the details within that primary agency are authoritative. Yep. Is there a question down the bottom here? No. Any other questions?
As I say, with the other systems, there'd be potentials of doing a password synchronisation potentially back with AD as well, so the AD password maps the password in those systems. Is that what you're saying?
Correct, yes. So when the password was changed in Active Directory, it would then flow out to those systems.
Do you have any problems with some of the applications having minimum password 3?
Yes, that's... Yep. So the question was, did we have issues with the password complexity between environments? And the answer was yes. So we had to bring them all down to the lowest common denominator. Okay.
I was going to ask you, did you have any problems with the attribute precedence across the different systems? Or?
Attribute precedence wasn't a real issue, actually. So, yeah, it was pretty... pretty self-explanatory. They all kind of kept to their own attributes, all the different systems. So, yeah, didn't have many issues with that.
Yeah, we'll look. Yeah, you get a couple. Okay. You guys get a couple.
So, at the end of the slide as well, there's a heap of links that you can go to for Scriptbox, as well as creating all your custom management agents and things like that. So have a bit of a look. And obviously your evaluation forms. Apparently you can win a sexy little mouse if you complete them. So,
okay, well, thanks very much for your time. If you're done, Phil and I will hang around. If you have any questions about the great work that was done at HealthSmart or any more generic questions about FIM and FIM R2. And thanks very much for Phil, and thanks for your time, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.